All right, let's get into it. First question and answer, I am a woman. Yeah. All right, some of you were like, is that a teenage Asian boy on stage? Nope, just a lesbian. But sometimes I feel like both, you know? Kind of depends on the day of the week.
I'm Irene, too, and I'm a stand-up comedian.
I am gay, and I look like this, right? So people will come up to me a lot and be like, hey, if I'm into your look, does that make me gay? Well, if you're a girl, yes, that makes you gay. And if you're a guy, that also makes you gay. Just got that twink look about me, you know? I was put on Earth to make everyone gay, so. And I get a toaster every time, you know what I mean? Probably like two of you get that reference from 1997's Ellen. And everyone else is like, oh, toasters, those are fun, so.
In July of 2016, KQED featured Irene Too as one of their top 20 women to watch. A list celebrating 20 local women artists, creatives, and makers who are pushing boundaries. In their interview, Irene said, quote, I think I'm still trying to find my voice in comedy. I think I'm getting closer, but I still don't know exactly what it is yet. Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. Finding your voice is an important step for any artist, especially comedy, which is personal. Even when it's not like reading from a page of your diary, comedy still has a relatability, and that's what makes us laugh and say, it's funny because it's true. And it's interesting that being yourself or finding out who you are, something that we think would come naturally, finding your voice is a process and takes time learning, like any skill.
I sort of started when I was 16 for the first time, and then I kind of did improv for a while. And then I feel like I really started doing stand-up when I was 19 in college, but I didn't do it like every day, so I never really know if it's like...
Take me back a little bit. What was it like? What was kind of doing it at 16?
It means I had a quarter-life crisis, if you can call it that, when you're 16, and I thought, like, when I was growing up that I was going to be, like, a scientist or something, and then I was like, you know what, I don't think I want to do that anymore, and then I decided I liked comedy, so I took a stand-up class at Second City, and I did that whole class, and I did, like, the graduation show where you do it for your, like, friends and family, and then I kind of stopped doing stand-up. And then I just did improv for a few years.
What type of scientist?
Like a chemist.
Like a chemist?
Well, I don't think I ever really researched what exactly I wanted to do, but I wanted to like either invent something cool or like mix chemicals together and like make something.
I'm glad to be in New York right now. I don't have to go to work today, which is great. Usually I work 3 hours a day. Oh, boy. That shit is exhausting, you know what I mean? Take a nap at 2 p.m. every day. It's true. And you're like, what do you do? I work in a bookstore. Yeah, very hard guarding the books from running away. You know, it's a tough job. Now, I like working at my bookstore, but I feel like in 2016, it's kind of like being on the Titanic. Like right before it's about to sink, you know. It's like really beautiful. There's books all around me. There's this random orchestra playing in the corner. They don't know what's about to happen. And like right outside, there's a giant iceberg made out of Kindles. So we're going to crash right through. Hope we get sponsored by Amazon. It would pay much better than this. stand-up is fun.
Like I mostly did stand up after like my freshman year of college, and it was definitely not like the cool comedy choice. You know, there was like sketch and improv, like those were the cool things to do, and I didn't get into like the college improv sketch group. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll do stand up again. But I always like wanted to be like one of the cool people that did, you know, all the sketch and improv, but I just didn't. The very first few sets, I hadn't come out yet, so I didn't like talk about being gay at all. I think I like wrote a joke about Ellen because she's my favorite comedian. So I was like, I probably wrote a joke about her. I don't remember the joke. I don't think it was very funny. And then I think I was trying to do a lot of like observational comedy, but I wasn't really good at it because I don't know. I don't really get I don't think I'm like an observational comic. So I was like trying really hard to like put like a square peg in a round hole in like writing the setup punchline things, but they weren't hitting.
You notice how square pegs don't fit in round holes.
It's really bizarre, you know? You'd think like a shape would fit into another shape.
I sounded more like Annie Rooney than like a
Yeah, so I was doing that. And then... and then I came out, and then I started talking about myself, which I liked better. So I think I think that's my thing, but I don't know yet. You know?
Yeah, still figuring.
Still figuring it out.
My favorite customer though at my bookstore is this guy who comes in every time when I'm working. Right? He'll always see me, and he goes, "Hey, you, Chinese," and then he leaves. Yeah, that's the entire interaction. And I feel like it's racist. But he's right. So I'm like, I can't really be mad at you. You're just accurate. Like, I could only be mad if he walked in, he saw me, and he was like, "Hey, you! Korean!" I'd be like, "Oh, hell no." And punch him in the face. Because we hate them. It's history. I'm just kidding. He's not like 100% accurate because I'm also part Mongolian, right? Because everybody's like a little bit Mongolian. They raped a lot of people, so. Moment of silence for that. And if that makes you feel uncomfortable, that's how I feel when white people are like, "I'm part Native American." I'm like, ooh, that's not a thing. Not consensual. So, and if you didn't laugh at that joke at all, you're probably thinking to yourself, where's Mongolia? So, it's in Asia. Can Google it later, Donald Trump.
Do you think, like, what are your thoughts? Are you trying to sort of be funny and, like, sneak in some truth?
Or, yes.
Like, is that just who you are? Like, is that a goal you have?
That's a goal, but I think that's also just who I am as a person. So I like to push people's buttons like just enough where you're like kind of annoyed, but then you think about why you're annoyed. And that's like how I view my stand-up is like if I didn't bother you like just a little bit, I didn't do my job. Mm-hmm. I have like this one joke where it's like a joke and I like say something about Koreans, but it's like that's like a it's not like, oh, I hate Korean people, but it's like part of a punchline. And one time there was a table full of Koreans and they just walked out.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh. And, you know, sometimes the people get mad or they like groan.
Yeah.
No, but I did a show for, not for Trump supporters, but I did a show in which there were a table of Trump supporters. They were clearly very drunk to begin with. And before we did the show, all the bartenders were like, "These people are problems. Like they, mm-hmm. we've seen the, you know, it's the, you might need to deal with it." Yeah. And I wasn't host. My friend was hosting the show, and he, I think, mentioned something about Berkeley, and then they like booed him. So basically, like he had a hard time with it. And then when I went up, I was talking about how like Trump hates like literally everything about me. And then one guy was like, "That's enough." And then he walked out. And like previous, to, like another comic before me, one of the guys was like, he got fed up during one of his jokes. And he was like, "I have to go to the bathroom now." And then he like walked out to go to the bathroom. I guess that was his way of like politely leaving.
Or was it like defending his like masculinity? I can't be offended by this. I need to just use the restroom.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, I need to leave, but I can't be like, I can't tell people that I'm mad about it, so I'm just going to say that I have to pee right now and announce it to everyone at like the show."
Most protest too much.
Yeah.
Way to say that quote accurately.
Yeah, exactly. But like right when I got on stage, someone said something like racist or like sexist. I was like, oh, this is going to be a terrible set. So then I kind of just yelled at them for 10 minutes.
Is So with that in mind, that there's like this goal of like trying to be provocative or like inject truth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would you rather have a laugh or would you rather have someone go up and like, oh, I never really thought about it?
I would rather have someone say, oh, I never really thought about it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Which has happened before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done shows where they were listening but not really laughing out loud, mm-hmm. but then like people talk to me afterwards and I like that better, you know, than if I told a joke that was, you know, a couple of my jokes are pretty whatever and not very provocative, and whenever someone tells me that's their favorite joke, I hate it. I'm like, no,
like you're silliest,
that's my least
just, like,
favorite
goofiest,
joke. Yeah. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with anything. Someone once told me, I'm glad you made me uncomfortable. And then they left. And I was like, oh, okay. I think that's...
take that positive.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, yeah. I think that's what I'm going for, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back in a moment. But first, you know what they say. You're only as good as your last shave. So all you children listening to the show, you are horrible, horrible people because you've never had a shave. I think that's the moral of that story, right? And that's why I shave every day with a Harry's razor. What is Harry's, you say? More than just a cleverly named shaving company? Well, a few years ago, two friends, Jeff and Andy, were tired of getting ripped off whenever they wanted to shave. And so they started Harry's. They bought their own razor factory, and by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you pay at the drugstore. And what I appreciate about Harry's is they've thought of everything. It's not just some random blade and handle, but you can tell they've thought of everything from how it feels in your hand to the color and texture of each handle to even the packages that it's shipped in. Plus, they have a great shave cream that weirdly smells amazing. Like, seriously, if they made a candle that smelled like their shave cream, I think I would buy it. Whether you're someone who shaves every day, every week, or every so often, Harry's is the razor for you. And Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer to fans of this show, go to harrys.com right now and enter code CESO, S-E-E-S-O, at checkout to get a post-shave balm, also free. That's harrys.com. Code CESO, S-E-E-S-O.
I think I'm like a pretty introverted person. I don't like to have conversations with people. Ironically, we're doing a podcast.
We can just sit here in silence.
No. No, I mean, I like talking to people, but I mostly like listening. Like, I don't really say a lot of things. So I think my version of arguing back or like putting my opinion out there is like doing comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get to like think about my response because like whenever I have a conversation with someone, like I don't think I've fully thought out what I want to say when I'm saying it. So if I say it, I just sound dumb.
And then like the next day you're like, oh,
I'm like,
I should
have
said this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, that's what I meant to say. And that made more sense. Mm-hmm. So I think I just like sit on my like anger and like just like thought process, and then I try and like write it down into something funny.
When I was 10 years old in history class, I loved dictators. Yeah, I'm going to repeat that one more time. I loved dictators. It's a weird thing to admit, but you know, I just thought they were very interesting people, right? Because I can appreciate someone that gets shit done. You know, like if number one on your to-do list is murder a million people and you do it, like good for you, you know? You did something with your life, right? It's like how I feel when I see an anorexic person. I'm like, that is terrible for you. But you're sort of achieving your goals in life. So like mixed feelings. And I say sort of because not dead yet. So it's the ultimate level of thin. A couple of you are like, that's dark. Why would you say something like that? I tried to be anorexic when I was younger, and I could not commit. So That's where that comes from. I actually would imagine myself dead, and I don't mean fresh dead. I mean like 3 months into the ground, rotting in my grave dead. The insects and rodents are eating me alive, and I'm like, oh my god, I might finally be thin enough for Hollywood. And they keep eating me, and they get to my bones. I'm like, oh, maybe my skeleton will make an appearance on NCIS, and I'll finally get that IMDb credit. But it turns out even my bones are too yellow. So, yeah, when I die, just bleach me, and I'm trying to make it out here. I'll do whatever it takes, even post-death. Hello, you've arrived at the darkest part of this show.
I would love to have my own show, like a sitcom based off of me, and like have that show be kind of like Ellen's old sitcom, or I love Broad City. That's mm-hmm. fun. It's like I would love to have a show that's like me and like some friends, and then we just do stuff, but I also like the Carmichael show where they like always talk about like an issue mm-hmm. in every episode, but I think I'd want mine to be like a little bit more lighthearted.
What would your character's name be?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or would you play the version of you?
I would play the version of me, but I don't know if I'd still want to be Irene, because I think my name's real old-timey, and it's not, like, fun.
Is that the only reason why you'd want to change his name?
Yeah, I want, like, a cool name, you know, when everyone's like, oh, did you see that show? But the show is called not Irene, because I feel
you
like...
You wouldn't make it, like, Eileen or something, like,
no,
similar.
No. Okay.
So I was talking about dictators, right? I had favorites. So my favorite, you know, like kind of like baseball cards, you know, you have your favorites. So my favorite dictator of all time was Benito Mussolini. Okay, sure. I liked him because he sounded like a pasta. So and I was like, oh my God, I love fettuccine. This guy's fucking great. I did not know any of his policies. But usually when I bring up a dictator, someone always like mentions Hitler. He's like the most famous one. And I think he's overrated. Like, sure, he did a lot of terrible things. Most importantly was his little mustache, right? If you're going to be evil, you got to grow the curls out. You know what I mean? So I think Hitler's a piece of shit. And recently, to back this fact up, I Googled which dictator's worse than Hitler. Yeah, that's in my Google search history, which I regret now because I know I'm going to get Facebook targeted ads. It's like, get a swastika. I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted. Just wanted some facts. But I Googled that, and then one of the first things that popped up was this chart. It was called, like, the worst dictators in history by number of people that they killed. And then underneath that were 10 little cartoon images of dictators. Very cute. And then under each little cartoon head were blood drops. And every blood drop represented 1 million people that dictator killed. Yeah, somebody got paid to make this chart. I don't know why. So, there were 7 dictators at the bottom, didn't care about them, right? Third from the top was Hitler with 17 blood drops, which means he killed 17 million people. Yeah, that's 6 million Jews and a bunch of other less important people who are bad at PR. You know, like, they killed a lot of gays, but like, not enough. And then second from the top was, like, some Russian dude who cares about the runner-up. And the number one dictator of all time with 78 blood drops, which means he killed 78 million people, was Chairman Mao. I didn't know that. When I learned this fact, I didn't know whether to feel, like, mad or proud. Because I was like, oh, he's Chinese. Like, of course he killed the most number of people. Like, we worked the hardest, obviously. That's my boy. But then I felt mad because I was like, wait a minute, like Mao doesn't get the credit that he deserves, right? He killed 60 million more people than Hitler. He did a way better job at his job, right? Like, why is everyone talking about Hitler? I feel like that's racism. Like, why do white guys get to be the best and the worst? So, while everyone was campaigning for Bernie Sanders, I was like, no, Chairman Mao! 2016, get him that credit. I'm glad like some of you guys were on board for that joke, and some of you were staring at me for 5 minutes. Totally fine. One time I was doing this show, I was just bombing for 5 minutes talking about dictators, but at the end of this joke, this one lady stands up, starts clapping, and goes, that's a good joke. So that's all I want. Thank you all so much. I'm Marine. Have a great night. Bye.
KQED picked like 20 like women to watch, and then I guess I didn't know that they were going to do this. They put some of the faces on public transportation. So if you were in San Francisco for like the last few months or so, like toward the end of summer, there'd just be like faces of me on the like on
was
the bus.
Was that weird?
Well, I didn't see it for a while because I'm not like downtown in San Francisco a lot. Like I'll go to the Mission. I guess mm-hmm. they didn't have it there. Or whatever bus route it was. But then people would text me and be like, I saw your face on a bus. And I'm like, that's so weird. But then one time I was downtown and then I looked up and it's like me staring at me.
Did you ever get recognized? Like, hey, you're that lady from the bus.
No, because I'm wearing sunglasses in that photo. And I think it's harder to recognize people with when they're wearing sunglasses.
Unless you're Bono.
Right. Yeah, sure. And then you're like, that's Bono. And his sunglasses look weird.
Yeah, because that's why he says he wears sunglasses.
So people don't recognize him?
No, because he's very unrecognizable without his glasses on. He says he has a very plain,
oh, really?
Normal face.
I guess I've never seen him without his glasses, so that's a good point.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you'd like to plug or push people towards?
Sure. January. So I live in San Francisco, and January is always Sketchfest month. Well, sometimes it's February, but this month it's January, and I have a show called Man Haters on January 29th at Doc's Lab. So come to that one or some other show. I don't know. You can find me online.
And people can check you out on
CISO
on an episode of The Guest List.
Yes.
With who else were you on with?
Cameron Esposito, Steve Byrne, Harrison Greenbaum, Rhea Butcher. I think that's it. No, and Matt Bronger.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good lineup.
Yeah, it was a fun show.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, yeah.
Thanks again to Irene, too. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you did as well. So thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more episodes like this, you can always search for The CISO C-Show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Twitter at CISO Show, that's S-E-E-S-O Show, and online at CISOshow.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time. Well, I won't see you, but you get the idea.
Is this the post-episode thing?